Our epistle reading this morning comes from the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 10, verses 1 through 22. This is found on page 1782 of the Pew Bible. I do not want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud and passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, God was not pleased with most of them, and they were struck down in the wilderness. Now these things occurred as examples for us, so that we might not desire evil as they did. Do not become idolaters, as some of them did, as it is written, "The people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. We must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents. Do not complain as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. These things happened to them to serve as an example. And they were written down to instruct us on whom the ends of the ages have come. So if you think you are standing, watch out that you do not fall. No testing has overtaken you that is not common to everyone. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tested beyond your strength, but with the testing, he will also provide the way out so that you may be able to endure it. Therefore, my dear friends, flee from the worship of idols. I speak as to sensible people. Judge for yourselves what I say. The cup of blessing that we bless, is it not a sharing in the blood of Christ? The bread that we break, is it not a sharing in the body of Christ? Because there is one bread, we who are many are one body, for we all partake of the one bread. Consider the people of Israel. Are not those who eat the sacrifices partners in the altar? What do I imply then? That food sacrificed to idols is anything, or that an idol is anything? No. I imply that what pagans sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. I do not want you to be partners with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and the table of demons. Or are we provoking the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? The word of the Lord. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of each of our hearts be pleasing and acceptable to you, O God, our rock and our redeemer. It's very hard to read words like, are we provoking the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? And follow it with the word of the Lord. Both of these passages we read this morning are a bit grim. It's hard to see the hope, the light in them. The people are scolded severely for idolatry. Idolatry is one of those words that when you read it in the Bible, you can almost hear the ominous music playing in the background. The Israelites got in trouble for having made a golden calf while Moses was away. The Corinthians are harshly warned against all sorts of idolatry. Run away from it, Paul says. It seems like a little bit of a change of tone from the writer of the letter that has so tenderly addressed his congregation to this point. But if we dig in, we see that he's not lost that glint of hope. There is a positive side to this seemingly angry passage in this letter. Look at verse 6. It says, to take the folly of those before, look to their screw-ups and punishments and consequences as examples. Take their example, he tells the church. You don't always have to learn this all the hard way by falling on your face. Look at those before and how they've fallen into idolatry, And that can be a motivation for avoiding it ourselves. Now, that's not to say that any of us are immune to it or anyone can perfectly avoid it, but it's helpful to see it around us to realize how pervasive it is. And oddly, it's primarily in the strange story about the golden calf that we can begin to see the goodness in these passages. When we read just a few verses further in Exodus, we see that in spite of this colossal goof-up, the Israelites were still God's chosen people. There was no way that they could be unchosen. Now, God didn't let them off the hook easily for turning away from him in their impatience. They still had to go through the consequences of their actions, but they didn't lose their status as God's special people. I kind of wonder what in the world would cause God's chosen people in Corinthians or in Exodus to turn to idols. Paul warns the church in Corinth that the biggest stumbling block, something that Jesus calls in the Gospels, serving two masters. It's putting trust in anything that is not God before putting trust in God. In the case of the Corinthian church, it was primarily the culture around them. This is something that comes up time and time again in this letter to them. At the heart of the issue, it doesn't really matter if they eat the idol meat or not. But they have to be careful to remember that it holds no power for them, but it has a strange power in other people's lives. They have to be mindful that not everyone around them has such an easy time avoiding this idolatry. In the case of Israel, the crux of the problem was good old-fashioned impatience that led to fear. The first idol they made was not the golden calf, but their own agenda and their own idea of when and how God should do things. Moses said, "Okay, guys, I'm going to go up that mountain. You wait here. I'm going to talk to God and I'll be back." So Moses hiked up the mountain, and after a while, things started to get antsy in the camp below. So much for Moses, the people thought. So much for this so-called God, this great deliverer. It's time to take things into our own hands. So they did. These people who had been delivered from Egypt by giant, miraculous deeds despaired that they had been left alone in the wilderness. The people who had seen the sea part for their crossing, then crash back down, crushing the army that pursued them, believed that God had abandoned them. The people who had been promised time and time again entry into a land flowing with milk and honey gave up on God when God's timing wasn't quick enough for them. And they took matters into their own hands. Perhaps unsurprisingly, God was not terribly pleased. It wasn't just the pure act of idolatry that upset God. It was that the people didn't trust in God, their deliverer, the one who led them through the sea, who guided them through the desert by a cloud, who protected them from their pursuers. After all that, they still didn't trust God when things didn't happen on their time. They were afraid that God had gone, and their fear overwhelmed them. So they fashioned a golden security blanket. Because I'm not taking any classes over the summer, I've been reading a great deal of fiction. It's nice to read things people haven't told me I have to read. And one of the books I just read is an interesting one called A.D. 30. It's about a Bedouin woman who lives at the time of Jesus. She has several encounters with Jesus and witnesses some of his miracles. Her life is changed by meeting Jesus. But as she goes about on her journeys, separate from his actual physical presence, she begins to doubt both Jesus and herself. All through the book, she struggles with fear. Fear of the unknown and fear that there is no God really looking out for her. A trusted friend that she's traveling with tells her a story about a woman overcome by fear. A woman traveling alone in the wilderness. Suddenly, the woman is confronted by a terrible beast that's trying to eat her. Naturally, she runs from it, but she comes to a cliff and sees no place else to go. So she jumps over the edge and grabs a hold of a vine. Hanging there, over the edge of the cliff, clinging to the vine, the beast can't reach her. But as she goes to climb further down to the safety at the bottom, she notices at the bottom of the ravine that there is waiting another beast ready to eat her. Glancing back up, she notices there are two small mice nibbling at the vine to which she clings. She can't climb up because of the beast above. She can't climb down because of the beast below, and she can't stay put because the mice will chew through the vine, sending her plummeting to her death. She begins to panic because she can't see anything other than the beast above, the beast below, and the mice gnawing away at her lifeline. And so she prays that God will give her a way out. But God does something different. God opens her eyes to something she hadn't seen before. Right beside her, growing out of the side of the cliff, are some of the most beautiful strawberries she's ever seen. So in spite of the beasts threatening to eat her and the mice threatening to drop her into the cliff, she stops. She thanks God for the beautiful strawberries, for the gift of the strawberries. And she takes the time to enjoy them. And that's where the story ends. There is no miraculous salvation at the end of this story. We're left wondering what happens to the woman, but knowing that in the midst of this hopeless situation, her eyes were opened to what God was doing right beside her that she hadn't noticed in her fear. The point is that God doesn't always intervene in our time or in the way that we expect. But if we trust God, even when there is no apparent way out, we can be free from the fear that leads us to idolatry, which at its core is a lack of trust in God. And freedom from fear, trust in God, leads to the sweet things in the midst of chaos that we might otherwise miss out. God doesn't always work the way that we expect or the way that we want, the way that we think that God should work. And in those times and places where God is not working how we expect, all we can see is the beast above and the beast below and the mice gnawing at our lifeline. In those times, we need to let go of our fear, of our impatience, of whatever it is that we're so focused on, whatever it is that we're desperately asking God to do in our way, and find the strawberries. Where is God moving then? And remember that even in our fear and our impatience, which are inevitable because we are human after all, there's nothing we can do that can make us unchosen by God. Which is good because we all fall into idolatry every day. We trust more in our own timetables and plans and ideas than in God's timing and plans and ideas. I think it's interesting that the 1 Corinthians passage this morning says that God will never allow us to be tempted by more than we can bear. Now, we're often tempted by more than we want to bear, or by more than we think we can bear, but never more than we can. Because if we are truly trusting God to handle things for us and allowing for God's movement in ways we don't expect, we have to admit that there's nothing too big for God to handle in God's time and on God's terms. So friends, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to play a song. And while it's playing, I'm saying pray and play too many times in the same sentence. While the song I'm playing is playing, we will be praying. I want you to pray a prayer of release. The rocks that the kids passed out during the children's sermon that symbolized their fears, their insecurities and idols, represent the same for us. I thought about passing out bigger rocks to the grown-ups because sometimes ours feel heavier. But children's fears and insecurities feel just as big to them as ours do to us. Pray over these. Pray that God would help you see what you need to release. And then when you're ready, just wander up and drop it down with the other rocks at the foot of the cross there. And if you're unable to get up here by yourself with your rock, that's okay. You can hand it to somebody else to take up with them. One of the great things about community is that sometimes we need help. We need somebody else to help us with our burdens, to help us put down our idols, to point the way to Christ. So if you can't or don't want to come up here with your rock, you can hand it to a neighbor who's coming up and have them place it for you. Once the song is finished playing, Tim is going to start right into our next hymn. And you can continue during singing that hymn if you like to bring rocks up if you still have yours. And then we'll move right into our time of spoken prayer together for one another, for our community, for our friends and our loved ones. Let us pray.